Okay, everyone, good morning once again. A couple of opening remarks before we do the roll call and the pledge, but I'd like to start this morning before we even go any further with welcoming three new supervisors or three new members of the board, not all supervisors. So congratulations to Supervisor Hillary Ronan. Where is Hillary? Oh, hi, Hillary. So would you stand up so we can all see you? And applaud your appointment. She'll be serving a 4-year term with us. So welcome. It's nice to have you. So also congratulations to Supervisor Jeff Sheehy. Jeff, where are you? Congratulations. Welcome, and his appointment is by the City and County Board for a 4-year term once again, so we have 2 4-year members. And congratulations to my old friend, longtime colleague, Council Member Margaret Abe-Koga. And she will also be serving a 4-year term. So this is terrific. We've got brand new members, and they're all serving 4-year terms. So with that, before we get to the pledge, let's do a roll call.
On the roll for the Board of Directors meeting of March 1st, 2017, Director Abe-Koga. Director Barrett. Here. Director Canepa.
Here.
Director Chavez.
Here.
Director Cutter.
Present.
Director Joya.
Here.
Director Groom. Director Haggerty. Director Kaplan.
Here.
Director Kim.
Here.
Director Miley.
Here.
Director Mitchell.
Here.
Director Ju.
Here.
Director Ronan.
Here.
Director Ross.
Here.
Director Sanchez, Director Sheehy,
here.
Director Sinks, Director Sparing, Director Wagon Connect, Director Zane, Secretary Rice,
here.
Vice Chair Hudson,
here.
Chair Niss,
here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you very much. And with that, I'm going to ask Supervisor Rice if she would lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you. I think this is the fullest attendance we've had in quite a while. It's great. So with that, we're going on to public comment. This is number 2, public comment on non-agenda matters. And Marcy, could you let us know how many we have and could you have them line up?
Yes, I have 7 requests to speak. Call them all at once.
Please, would you?
Albert Kiefner, Tom Lewis, David Gassman, Francisco De Costa, Steve Zeltzer, Daniel Berman, and Ahimsa Porter. I can't read it.
Soonchai.
I'm sorry. Okay, that's fine. And how many minutes would you like? Chair Niss. We have 8.
Speaker.
Let's hold it to about 2.5 minutes, which I know is a little difficult, but try to keep it under 3, would you please? And if you're going to say just what the guy in back of you, in front of you said, why don't you tell us that if you're associating your comments with somebody else you're with? Thanks.
Okay, my name is Steve Zeltzer. I'm with United Public Workers for Action and Injured Workers National Network. And I'm here today to basically call on this board, which is elected politicians throughout Northern California, to call for an independent investigation about what's been going on with the agency. As everyone knows here, two workers here at this agency, the manager of records, Michael Bachman, and Sarah Steele, who was a contract worker hired to take care of the documents that were being transferred, were discovered that the documents were being destroyed by the agency. And this is a serious legal matter because these documents are required by lawyers, by settlement agreements, to show the record of companies that pollute in the Bay Area, pollution and hazards. So the destruction of these documents, in our view, is a criminal act. And we don't believe that the management here of this agency should be involved in investigating this. They cannot investigate themselves. There is a systemic problem in this country of whistleblowers, federal, state, local whistleblowers, who try to do their job, try to be accountable to themselves and the public, and get fired. And the net result of that in agencies like this is people are intimidated and terrorized. If workers are afraid to speak up about what they see as wrongdoing, an illegal activity, that's a threat to the viability of the agency, the accountability of the agency. So what we're saying on our request to you is that you immediately rehire these workers, Michael Bachman and Sarah Steele, number one. And number two, you call for the state California Attorney General Xavier Becerra to make an independent investigation. There may not be criminal activity. I believe there is. There may not, but we need to have an independent investigation, and the state attorney general needs to be called upon, so we urge you to take that action.
Thank you. Our next speaker, please.
My name is Dr. Ahimsa Porter Soom-Chai. I'm a licensed physician. In the year 1997, I was the attending physician in charge of the Persian Gulf Agent Orange Ionizing Radiation Registry at the Palo Alto VA. That is the nation's largest toxic registry. And in 2003, I founded the Radiological Subcommittee of the Hunters Point Shipyard Restoration Advisory Board. I'm also the physician of record on the death certificate of my father, a shipyard worker whose contributing cause of death was asbestosis. I'm very, very concerned about the firing of Mr. Bachman and Ms. Steele, because now more than ever, we need people who are courageous in their oversight of particularly development projects in the southeast area of San Francisco, from Mission Bay to Hunters Point to Candlestick. Development plan environmental impact reports for these projects I contributed to. I am a member of the public comment for these projects, and they identified numerous unmitigable environmental impacts due to exposure to particulates, volatile organic compounds. And I'm also personally the whistleblower to the White House with regard to the fraudulent soil samples that were collected at the Hunters Point shipyard. I received a letter from President Obama for my leadership on informing the White House, the Homeland Security, and the Environmental Protection Agency about these fraudulent soil samples that you probably have heard about. So it's very, very important for projects that we know expose children, expose people at risk of cardiopulmonary disease, expose vulnerable communities to substances like particulates, diesel, benzene, toluene, and ionizing radiation, that we have people who are willing to stand up, take a stand. These people deserve to be commended. They don't deserve to be fired. Thank you very much.
By the way, timer is set two minutes, not 2.5 minutes. I can't do 30 seconds. Pardon?
We don't have the ability to do 30-second increments, so we can give.
That's why
minutes.
I said try to stay close to that, if possible. So could you warn people when it's 2 minutes, please, and then they've got a few seconds to finish up. Thanks, Marcy.
My name is Francisco Da Costa, and I represent the First People of San Francisco, the Mohawk Mohlone. This land was once very pristine, and your agency, and I know some people here, like Jack Broadman, I've known him for a long time, and I've known some of the directors here who know my work when it comes to environmental issues. Now, when we read about this agency, that they impede employees from doing their job, whistleblowers, this agency must be foremost in helping them. And if you do not do your duty, shame on you. I ask you, are y'all really satisfied with the person that we have in the White House? Do y'all want to be associated with the type of behavior this man purports, saying one thing and doing another? On Hunter's Point, we had a rogue developer, Lennar Urban. Now they have another company, Five Points, Communities, whatever. I say the same snake, different head. Corrupt. The Bay Area Air Quality Management District, when we was there, when I was there, we reported about high levels of asbestos structures. Our children, our infants, our youth, our young adults, our seniors were all impacted. Finally, we found out that this rogue developer removed the batteries from the monitors, impeding the equipment to do its job. Mr. Broadman can give you the whole report. My friends, in the Bay Area, we embrace everybody. This is the land of the Mohawk Mohlone. If you don't know anything about it, we have a website, muwekma.org. I plead with you, be decent, be stellar, be astute, but most importantly, have your heart in the right place to do the right thing. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next speaker.
Hello, my name is Dan Berman, and I've been involved in worker health and safety issues since before OSHA existed. And I've published a book called Death on the Job, for which I'm writing a sequel. And I'm very interested in environmental matters, too. I published a book called Who Owns the Sun? And we had a foreword by the now disgraced Ralph Nader. That is, the Democrats consider him a disgrace. My point is, if workers and whistleblowers are not protected, you might as well not have an agency. And in the case of, for example, Darrell Whitman, who was the whistleblower from the Whistleblower Protection Program, Region 9 of the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, was fired when he pushed too hard to protect workers who'd been let go or fired or disciplined for criticizing health and safety practices at their workplaces. Now, Darrell Whitman took his case all the way to the Secretary of Labor. Maybe you've heard this name, Thomas Perez. Okay, the Secretary of Labor didn't want to deal with it, and then said that just walked away from him. But under Section 11C of the OSHA Act, you're supposed to be protected. Only 2% of the people who file these complaints actually are found to have a basis in fact. Now, California has Democrats from top to bottom that control the legislature and the assembly. If they can't do better, the Department of Labor and other groups in protecting people who file OSHA complaints who expose malfeasance inside the agency, then you might as well hang it up and go home and get by doing something else, maybe sell shoes or something. Okay, that's my main point. And with this new administration in the White House and both sides, California has a chance to really show the world how it should be done. And we've done so many wonderful things. I have PV panels up on my house, and we started a campaign to replace Pacific Gas and Electric with SMUD. We were beaten. Our friends at PG&E spent $14 million to beat us in a local election 11 years ago. But that's show business. We play by the rules. Anyway, I hope you have the courage to restore these people, Michael Bachman and Sarah Steele.
Okay, thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Next to last speaker.
Hello, my name is Albert Kiefner with the Alameda Interfaith Climate Action Network, and I'm here to file a complaint. The records that were destroyed involve complaints, notices of violations, and settlements. And this has to do with one of the complaints that was destroyed, the one that Michael Bachman mentioned in 91 for the acid plant at Tesoro Refinery, which is, or Tosca Refinery, which is now Tesoro Refinery. I was out at the Martinez VA outpatient clinic yesterday for an audiology appointment. I'm missing a hearing aid. And so I hope I can hear whatever you guys have to say. When I got outside, I noticed that my skin was burning, my nose was burning, and I looked up, and I could see the full broadside of what is now the Tesoro Refinery. And it was an acid feeling, an acid feeling. And I saw one of, at least one of the 31 stacks that I counted, a big plume of smoke coming off of it. And I looked at it for a while, and I turned around and walked around. I was a little quavering on my feet. And so I'm just wondering, you know, what's happened since 91 and the 25 years since then with regard to acid emissions from that plant? Because the objective of apparently of giving these people low fines is so that you folks will not hear about it and take action. Well, I'm here to file a complaint, and I want a notice of violation and a settlement agreement and all that. I want to see it all, because I want to know what's going on here. Thank you.
Thank you, and we have one last speaker.
Hi, I'm David Gassman. I'm active with the Sunflower Alliance and with No Coal in Oakland, and I'm also here to speak on this Bachman Steel matter. I find it incredibly distressing that something like this even appears to be happening, and I agree completely that there should be an investigation to find out precisely what went on. As Director Kaplan can tell you, and as I suspect Director Miley knows directly, you know, we in Oakland the city of Oakland is facing this lawsuit now about coal shipment. And I won't go, you know, I don't even know all the details. I'm not an attorney. But we want to trust that the processes are legit, that we can believe the results of the processes of government. And if this kind of thing where records are destroyed is not thoroughly exposed and thoroughly corrected, we ain't gonna trust it. I'm not going to. How could I? You know, we're seeing the EPA now being faced with mammoth, with, you know, serious budget cuts. That's, I hope it doesn't happen, but I fear it will. So we're counting on you, and it's not just you in the room, it's really all of us, to protect us. I've said enough. You get my point. Thank you.
Thank you. And who do we have left, Mercy?
Tom Lewis, and then an additional speaker, Matthew Zugsbonger.
Okay, would you both hold it to 2 minutes? Thank you.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the board. My name is Matthew Zugsberger. I've been a commercial diver for 17 years. I've worked all over the world, from the west coast of Africa to the Gulf of Mexico. I was there during Katrina. Recently, I started a project out here at Drake's Estero, the oyster farm that was being removed. Early in October, I reported to my supervisors the discharge of CCA, chromated copper, arsenic, and also creosote, grade 3, into the environment. The seal habitat. I received grade 3 chemical burns in which I was treated. At that point, I also complained and requested a review of the payroll schedule under Davis-Bacon. Found out we were misclassified. I went to OSHA. I did the appropriate things. I went from my supervisor to the project manager to National Park Service and all the way down the line. I eventually ended up filing a complaint with the Department of the Interior Office of the Inspector General, who immediately turned the investigation to be done internally by NPS. I found this to be a conflict of interest. As of yesterday, they actually missed their deadline for the second time of responding to OIG. On January 3rd, I wrote a letter to the Secretary, Sally Jewell, of the U.S. Department of the Interior. It is still yet to be responded to. Within several days of my complaint to the Department of the Office of the Inspector General, I was terminated from my project. I filed a complaint with OSHA, OSHA Whistleblowers Program. They investigated. The contractor received 13 serious citations on site, four of which should have been willful. When I confronted OSHA about this, they went back and they did issue the other two citations for commercial diving, but later after the fact, they redacted those two commercial diving citations and failed to inform me. When I demanded an explanation, they refused to give it to me. But thank you for your time.
Thank you, and we have a last speaker. Am I correct?
Thank you, members of the board. Good morning. I'm Tom Lewis from Martinez. Today I'm wearing my second vice president of the NAACP hat. You should have copies of my speech and also an invitation to the NAACP's banquet that I've talked to you about several times. People say that I'm the life of the party because I tell a joke or two. Although I may be laughing loud and hearty, deep inside I'm blue. I'm blue because my sense is that you're more in tune with the oil industry's needs than the welfare of your most impacted and vulnerable constituents. The most toxic-free, habitable environment possible should be a civil and human right. However, we in the community have a difficult enough time earning livings, taking care of our families, without coming to San Francisco, missing work to tell you that we want you to do your jobs the way you were elected to do. Rather than the community having to come to you, please accept my invitation to come and meet your community. We in the East County NAACP are having our 60th anniversary. There will be no long speeches. We are going to be giving out the scholarships, and then we're going to have a party. And there will be good food, dancing, music, and socializing. And we're going to try to have fun. Karen, John, Mark, you're all in my county. You're especially welcome. And anyone else, you know, please contact me. I have tickets. I can get more. Appreciate your time. Thanks,
Mr. Lewis. Okay, without any further, Marcy, that's it? Okay, so we'll go on to the rest of the meeting.
Madam Chair, may I ask a question?
Oh, sorry. Rebecca, I can't get used to your being there.
Yes, I know. I'm now the right wing. In any case, good morning.
I doubt it.
thank you much. Obviously, we can't and don't have the information to comment on the substance of the allegations that have been in the press and that the public is commenting on, but scheduling questions are always in order. So let me just ask if we plan to schedule, and that I would like
we
us to schedule a report on the allegations.
We're going from the 14th item on to closed session.
Okay,
so
we'll
be
will have an opportunity
then.
To discuss
yes,
it.
Yes.
Okay, thank you, and thank you to everyone who came.
Okay, so let's with that go on to our committee reports for this morning. Hang on, did I miss consent? Unless there's any difficulty with the consent calendar, I would encourage a motion.
Second.
Oh, yes. Wait a minute. Hang on 1 second. I should announce that we would normally have been honoring Jan Pepper this morning, but she was not able to come, so we have sent her commendation in the mail. Thanks for reminding me. Okay. And then I had a motion from Karen and a second. So all those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, thank you.
And I'm going to just register a no vote on number 9. And the reason is that as we get contracts, I'd like more background information in the future. Thank you.
Please note that, Marcy. Anybody else have a no vote or something to comment on? And if not, we'll go back to the rest of our agenda and start with committee reports. Our first committee report is going to be a report of the Advisory Council, and it looks like, Rod, you're going to do that one?
Yes.
Good, thanks.
Thank you. This is the report of the Advisory Council meeting. The Council met on Monday, February 6, 2017. We approved the minutes of October 3, 2016, and continued deliberation on the efficacy of greenhouse gas caps for local refineries, and provided the final edits to a document that you will be receiving on this topic. The Council received a staff presentation on Regulation 13, Rule 1, Refinery Carbon Intensity Cap. And finally, the Council deliberated on the draft 2017 Clean Air Plan and Regional Climate Protection Strategy, with particular emphasis on the executive summary and first chapter. The next meeting is of the Council as of the call of the chair, and I believe that will be early April. This concludes the chair report of the Advisory Council. I'm sorry, I'm not the chair. I'm your ex officio liaison. Mm-hmm.
Right. Good. Okay. Thank you very much. And Rod, I know you're going to have to leave early this morning, just so we already know that you're going because you have an important.
My mayor is giving a State of the City address this morning, sure, for which I need to be present. But I wanted to be here for the first part of the meeting. Thank you.
Okay, so do we need a vote on that? We don't, do we?
No. Madam Chair and members of the board, I just wanted to mention, Director Sanks, that the board will be considering proposed rule 1216 in May, and I think it's going to be appropriate to have the full Advisory Council presentation at that time. And the Executive Council, I believe, or Executive Committee, excuse me, last week discussed this, and I think that was their recommendation. So the Advisory Council will have an opportunity to give the full report, and the board will get a chance to deliberate on your recommendations.
Yes, thank you. And again, I'm ex officio, so I'm listening. I'm encouraging the group to bring these questions that we're wrestling with. We appreciate their opinions on. There was a lot of engagement and discussion, not only on 1216, but 1118 and now 13-1 as well. So I think at the next meeting, there will be quite a bit of further dialogue about those. So,
when's your next meeting, Rod?
It's tentatively scheduled for early April, the 3rd, I believe.
Okay. Thanks.
Yep.
Okay, thank you very much. Agenda item number 11 is Budget and Finance Committee. Carol's not here, so Katie Rice will do that.
All right. So this is the report of the Budget and Finance Committee. The committee met on Wednesday, February 22nd, and approved the minutes of January 25th, 2017. We reviewed and discussed the staff presentation, discussion of projects and funding priorities relevant to the fiscal year ending 2018 budget. The next meeting of the Budget and Finance Committee will be held on Wednesday, March 22nd at 9:30 a.m. here at 375 Beale Street. And this concludes the chair's report of the Budget and Finance Committee.
Thank you. Next is agenda item number 12, which is the report of the Executive Committee. We met February 22nd, approved minutes from November. Also heard the Hearing Board's quarterly report, which captured July to September and October to December. We had an update from the Bay Area Regional Collaborative. We reviewed and discussed the staff presentation update on technology implementation, TIO. And due to the shortage of time that day, the staff suggested that the presentation, which was on the efficacy of greenhouse gas caps, be tabled. The consensus of the committee, public comments pertaining to this were heard, and the presentation was tabled. The next meeting will be held Monday, April 17th here, and that concludes my report. And we go on to number 13. Karen, that is yours.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The report of the Mobile Source Committee, the committee met on Thursday, February 23rd, and approved the minutes of January 26th. The committee reviewed and discussed the staff presentation, projects with proposed grant awards over $100,000. The committee recommends the board approve the Carl Moyer program projects with proposed grant awards over $100,000 as shown in Attachment A of today's agenda, and authorization of the executive officer, APCO, to enter into agreements with applicants for those recommended projects. The committee then reviewed and discussed the staff presentation, Air District Grant Programs Overview. And finally, the committee reviewed and discussed the staff presentation, Participation in Year 19 of the Carl Moyer Program and 2017 Caltrain Funding Plan. That isn't year 19, meaning 2019. It's the 19th year of the program. The committee recommends the board approve and adopt a resolution authorizing the executive officer, APCO, to execute all necessary agreements with the California Air Resources Board relating to the Air District's receipt of Carl Moyer program funds for fiscal year 2016-17, which, as I stated earlier, is program year 19, and the allocation of $3 million in Mobile Source incentive funding to provide the required match funding and additional monies for projects eligible for funding under the Carl Moyer program guidelines, and the proposed 2017 funding plan for the Caltrain electrification project. The next meeting of Mobile Source will be Thursday, March 23rd, and I move that the board approve the Mobile Source Committee's recommendation.
Second.
All those in favor?
Thank you. I had one question. How much has the Air District put into Caltrain electrification so far?
We had a big discussion on this, so good question.
$16 million.
$16 million.
Correct. From a commitment that we made of $20 million, that funding is subject to a contract, and that funding comes back to the Air District in the event that the project does not move forward.
And it's obviously dependent on some $640 million from the federal government that's sitting on Elaine Chao's desk, right?
$678 million.
Thank you. Is there anything we as a body can do to encourage the federal government to release these funds so essential for moving people around in the Bay Area?
We did have that conversation. This is a regulatory body, and it was determined that we all sit on a variety of other boards and commissions, and that it is appropriate for those boards and commissions and each of us individually in our elected position to do that, but that the Air Board should wait. I don't want to say sit it out, because we were very concerned about it, but it was more that the advocacy should come from those other bodies and commissions.
Okay. Well, I'll have you know that the Cities Association will be of Santa Clara County will be taking this up as part of other infrastructure funding requests to the federal government. We feel very strongly that this is an essential part of not only clean air, but getting people around in our area. So thank you for your,
work.
And I appreciate the Air District and the committee moving this funding forward.
And I know Director Groom isn't here, and she does not sit on this committee, but I did have a conversation with her when we were in another committee, and agreed that all of us in the Bay Area feel that this is of highest priority, and so it isn't just a peninsula situation, and so we encourage everyone to participate in getting those funds released.
We welcome some Republicans. There may be some here also helping to advocate for this, because there have been others in the state who have been less helpful, frankly. Thank you.
Also, for any of you who are going to the National League of Cities, which starts in a couple of weeks, we are putting a group together that will also make a visit to whomever is holding those strings, and they are holding them pretty tightly at this point. Rebecca, you wanted to speak?
Thank you very much. Yeah, I just wanted to reiterate in front of everybody what I said at the Mobile Source Committee, which is, even though I represent the East Bay, I think this project is incredibly important, and that it's unfortunate that it has been conflated with a statewide high-speed rail project, which it is, in fact, separate from. I have been advocating for this project for over 15 years, and it was on the list for funding via MTC and others long before statewide high-speed rail was envisioned, and that even if they don't want to fund statewide high-speed rail, there's no reason not to do Caltrain electrification, and I would be happy to support any advocacy efforts. And, you know, if a letter from this body would be helpful, I would be happy for us to do that, but I'd also be happy to just do it separately. But I absolutely think that it's an important project and that all of us in the region should support it. Thank you.
Someone, Brad, with you?
Yes. Thank you. I do think that we could communicate that we're for clean air that we're looking at $20 million to come into this project, and that's just information, so, you know, to reinforce that our commitment to this project.
Yeah, staff. Yeah, the staff said they're going to reach out to the other agencies, right?
Right. Yeah. That's correct, Dr. Miley. If I can, Madam Chair, I'd just like to I'd like to suggest that we monitor the situation pretty closely, and if it makes sense for us to lend our voice to advocate for this, I think we should be prepared to do so. So I'll bring that back to the committee.
I would agree with you, Jack. Scott?
So, Jack, I'm sure that when the EIR was done, we made some sort of comments, and there was some sort of analysis done in relationship to the impacts of air quality. Would it not be prudent that we dust that off and talk to it from an air quality standpoint and you know, what it does to the improvement of air quality in the region?
No, absolutely.
I think we could write a technical letter that speaks to the air quality in the region.
Right.
I mean, I know the EPA is going away, but
we're still
like,
here.
Yeah, it seems like we're still here, so we should do that. And I would also like to say that MTC is going to D.C. in March 13th, 14th, and 15th, and, you know, that's going to be one of our main discussion points with the agencies and the delegations that we meet with.
Yeah, I talked to Rod about this a minute ago, but I gave a list of different committees and persons that the Contra Costa Transportation Authority saw Monday and Tuesday in D.C. I brought this up at least 10 times. If there's a follow-up letter, I'd like to see each one of them get it. If you need me, they all have my cards. But we had a variety of people, and I think one of the committees that I wouldn't expect to get some help from, I think you can expect to get some help from now, was the Department of Energy. And every time I mentioned that we were also talking about a technology innovation office, it resonated very well. So I think the opportunities are there. You just heard from Supervisor Haggerty. He's going back on the 14th. I just told Mr. Sinks I'm going back on the 12th, and we're going to go back and see the same people and hammer it. And it is focusing on this one project that I think helps, and the fact the electrification. And you got to hit one little buzzword. You're talking about, or buzz term, you're talking about moving people through 11 stops that now they can only get through 7. And every time you said that, their eyes lit up. But I'm sure there are others. That's why I'm waiting for you to send me the letter of what the other three are. You don't have a lot of time, so you got to focus on one or two things. But that's what we're doing right now. The problem in a nutshell is when you go into the Department of Transportation, there's one person there that you've seen 2 or 3 weeks ago. The rest of them are gone. I mean, there isn't anything going on right now. So, you know, it may change in the next week or two. Let's hope so. But this is the project that we hammered on along with the autonomous vehicle.
Madam Chair, along that line, you know, it's great to go see the Department of Transportation, but the person holding this up is Congressman McCarthy out of Bakersfield. Yes. That's who you all need to go see and convince him that this has nothing to do with that. So I'm sure the Department of Transportation and Department of Energy would love to see this program, but until Kevin McCarthy says yes, nothing's going to happen.
And he's on our list of people to see while we're there, if we can get in. And that's the problem, I think.
Right.
I think that's the problem that many people have had, is how to get access. So I would urge anyone who has access to him to use that connection. John?
Yeah, I think Karen's hit the nail on the head. I mean, we can spin our wheels with all these different letters. The bottom line, these decisions are being made at that political level, and frankly, there's an effort by the business community in the Bay Area, the Silicon Valley Leadership Group, Bay Area Council, attending his fundraisers, talking to him. Right. I think that, if anything, maybe the Bay Area writes one uniform letter signed on, just sort of like we did on the, remember when we were working on the OEHA maps from on disadvantaged communities, when the four regional agencies wrote letters, having the Bay Area Council, Silicon Valley Leadership Group, whatever other political or, you know, elected organizations sign on. So one unified letter from the Bay Area that has labor, business, elected, which may include MTC, ABAT, all the four regional agencies, however sort of the best approach, that's one ask. Because that's it's a political decision. It's not the staff level. With all due respect, the staff level folks at these agencies aren't making the decision. I just got back from D.C. yesterday. It's at that level. So it just seems maybe, Jack, you know, working through even BARC, Bay Regional Collaborative, to get like all the agencies and business and labor to sort of do one letter.
And I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I have one more comment. CSAC is having a regional meeting next Thursday down in Bakersfield.
In Kern, that's right, yes.
And I'm going. I don't know if John's going, but if staff wants to put some talking points together for me, I'll be happy to drop into the district office.
And I think your idea, John, of pulling a group together, but both the National League of Cities will be in D.C., and I think, is NACO there now? So something is going on there now, and I think it's NACO.
Some of us came back early to be here, right, Scott? Right.
Hey, wait a minute.
Oh, is that dedication, you guys?
Well,
I'm impressed.
Same plane, John. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, everyone. And I think one of the things you may want to remember is right now, Caltrain carries 16,000 passengers a day. Electrification has the opportunity to double that, believe it or not. So this is a hugely important spare the air, climate change, however we may want to characterize it, it's going to make an enormous difference. That train is used. That train is heavily used. Okay, with that, thank you all. And we're going on to number 14, and then we will go to closed session.
So, Madam Chair, members of the board.
Did we vote? We did. Well, I don't think we did.
What did we not do?
Let's debate about it. Did we vote, Marcy?
Yes.
Okay.
I know. Okay. Okay, Madam Chair, members of the board. Item number 14 is the presentation of our draft 2017 Clean Air Plan, entitled Spare the Air, Cool the Climate. What this plan does, it essentially integrates our smog program, our climate program, our local communities protection program into one integrated strategy moving forward, essentially creating the blueprint for how we will achieve our clean air standards, protect local communities, and contribute to the overall climate agenda. What's most, I think, compelling by this plan is it really presents a bold vision for how we will be able to achieve our 2015 climate goals, our 2050 climate goals. The plans are available if you'd like to take one today, certainly available electronically. I just wanted to make sure that we have a presentation for the entire board today. You're going to be considering this plan on April 19th, excuse me. Without any further ado, let me have Henry Hilken, your planning director, present this plan for you. As I said, we will have actually a subsequent set of workshops before, I believe, also when they hear the plan again in April, because we've had already a set of workshops.
We just finished some open houses. That's right.
And so you're hearing this as a in addition to all the comments we've heard, the work of many, many months, if not years, by staff. So I'm very proud of the work they've done here for you. With that, I'm going to introduce Henry Holcomb.
Thank you, Jack. Good morning, members of the board. Chair Ness has stepped away, but good morning, members of the board. We presented this item to you in January at your board retreat, so I'm going to give a little bit of background for the benefit of the board members that weren't at the January retreat and some of the newer board members, and then also for everybody's information, drill down a little bit more on what we've done since January and our thoughts in particular on implementing this plan. So to start off, as Jack said, there are two overarching objectives of this plan, to protect the climate and to protect public health. We want to continue to have the Bay Area lead to make deep greenhouse gas emission reductions to achieve long-term climate stabilization goals. And secondly, to continue to reduce air pollution emissions and population exposure to air pollution. We've made huge progress in air pollution in the Bay Area, but there are still communities that suffer from bad air quality. So we need to continue that progress. And those are the two basic objectives of the plan. So more specifically, what it is, it's updating our current Clean Air Plan, which is from 2010. This plan, like that plan, is a multi-pollutant plan. So it lays out 85 different control measures in different economic sectors that are intended to reduce emissions of ozone precursors, or smog, reducing fine particulate matter, reducing air toxics, and reducing greenhouse gases. And specifically with respect to GHGs, we are aiming for our long-term objective are parallel with the state's objective to reduce emissions 40% below 1990 levels by 2030 and 80% below 1990 levels by 2050. So as Jack said, in addition to these 85 discrete near-term control measures, the plan also presents a longer-term vision for what the Bay Area could look like, should look like, in 2050 if we're going to reach those objectives. And I'll elaborate on that in just a moment. First, I have a couple slides to just illustrate those challenges that I teed up on the first slide. With respect to climate, this chart shows our greenhouse gas emission forecasts for the Bay Area by various economic sectors. So the different colors, you can see the legend on the bottom shows the red is transportation, the sort of bluish teal color is stationary sources, energy basically is our power plants, and so forth. On the left axis is 1990 emissions. Again, 1990 is really the benchmark for our planning and the state's planning. And on the right are the percentage reductions from that 1990 benchmark. And then the dotted line shows the objectives for 2020 in the initial AB 32 legislation, and then 2030 objectives in SB 32 for the state, and then also 2050 objectives for the state and for the region. So we've got some work to do. We've made some progress. There's a lot on the way. I'm sorry, I should have pointed out, this chart reflects many of the important state programs that have already been adopted. So the PAVLI emission standards for motor vehicles, the renewable portfolio standards, the low carbon fuel standards, some of the regulations that have already been adopted by the state are reflected here. The newer measures that are proposed in the state's recently released draft scoping plan update are not reflected in there. So there's, nor are the measures in this plan. So the work that we're proposing in this plan and the very important work that continues in Sacramento will help lower that line and make important emission reductions. But we definitely have some work to do here. With respect to the air pollution exposure issue, this shows our CARE communities. The Community Air Risk Evaluation Program is an air district program started over 10 years ago where we modeled exposure to air pollution throughout the Bay Area and also looked at local health vulnerabilities, ER visits, asthma rates, cardiovascular disease, et cetera, and combining the modeled concentrations of air pollution exposure and those health indicators, we have identified communities where people are disproportionately exposed to air pollution. So again, as I mentioned at the outset, we've made great progress, but these communities do suffer poor air at sometimes, and near roadways or near industrial facilities frequently. And so, again, our objective here is to improve health in all of these communities and make those disparities go away. So with respect to the vision that Jack and I both mentioned, the first two sort of summarize what I've said. We want the long-range vision for, with respect to GHGs, is to achieve that 2050 target, 80% below 1990. And then, again, for the health risk and exposure to air pollution, essentially make all those colored areas go away and everybody enjoys clean air. These are aspirational goals. They're far-reaching. The strategy does not get us there, but it makes very important initial steps to get us there. So to achieve these goals, what would the region look like? We would have to significantly reduce, if not eliminate, fossil fuel combustion, get fossil fuels out of our buildings, make sure our buildings, our lights, and our heating systems are run on renewable power. The electricity grid is produced from renewable energy, not fossil fuels. Transportation sector, sort of a twofold strategy there. Number one, technology-based, move to our electric vehicles or renewable fuels, and then also addressing behavior, significantly reducing vehicle miles traveled through transit, walking, cycling, carpooling, and so forth. We would see at that future date, the oil companies and refineries would move more towards a renewable fuel portfolio to produce those renewable fuels that we would be needing under this sort of vision. And much less waste to our landfills, and especially keeping organics out of our waste stream and putting that organic material to use. Again, aspirational goals. We want to set the bar high and sort of lead a discussion in the Bay Area where we need to go. Now, to start us on that journey, we lay out these 85 control measures in the control strategy that are part of the plan. It draws upon all the different tools in our toolbox, our regulatory and rulemaking authorities, certainly, but also a lot of other things that we do here, our grants and incentives, our partnerships with the state, with our regional partners, with the cities and counties, especially a lot of work with cities and counties. A lot of work is envisioned with community engagement, working with community groups and the public. And, of course, science and research is always part of our work. And so you can see some of the general priorities that reflect that vision. We have a lot of rulemaking proposed to reduce emissions from all different sources that we regulate. I've mentioned reducing fossil fuel combustion. There's also an emphasis on reducing methane. Methane is a very powerful greenhouse gas, and so we see some near-term benefits in reducing methane emissions while we're working on more difficult strategies to reduce carbon dioxide emissions from fossil fuel combustion. And finally, I've mentioned the transportation sector, but really going through technology, cleaner vehicles, and reduced VMT, both are part of the transportation control measures that we have proposed in the plan. So drilling down a little bit more into some of these overall objectives, rulemaking, this is our rule development calendar for the next couple of years. We've been speaking to the full board and certainly the Stationary Source Committee quite a bit about these rules. You'll see several of the refinery strategy rules that have received a great deal of attention on this chart. Also the Rule 1118, which would reduce the allowable risk levels from all existing facilities. That's a very important risk rulemaking that will be coming to the board shortly. Several refinery rules that we've been talking to you about quite a bit. Oil and gas rule is a greenhouse gas rule that we're partnering with the state of California. Air Resources Board is doing rulemaking on this sector as well. We will have measures looking at greenhouse gases and crude slate, how they're addressed through our new source review permitting program, and a basin-wide methane strategy. So that's several rulemakings that would address methane from landfills, from wastewater treatment, from miscellaneous leaks at industrial facilities, beefing up our methane measurement system to improve our emission inventory, so sort of a wide-ranging basin-wide methane approach. And then next year we have several more refinery rules, several various sulfur sources, turbines, oil and gas production. Did I list that twice? I'm sorry, I jumped ahead a little bit. And so a variety of refinery rules and GHG rules, also an odor rule. We've had a lot of odor complaints down in the Milpitas in the South Bay, And so we want to look at our rules for both landfills, composting, and odors overall to make sure that we've really got a good sort of cradle-to-grave way of handling our waste streams so that we are composting and recycling as much as we can, but not impacting the air quality or the neighbors with air pollution or odors. A lot of work with local governments. That's always been a major focus of our work, especially with respect to climate, and so that's going to continue. We really want to enhance that and continue that and enhance that. We've already reached out to the city staff. What do you need from us? We've got a lot of ideas, but we want to talk to the people we work with. We've done a survey. We're going to be convening a focus group. A few of the things that we have in mind so far are building upon some work we've already done with Kyoto USA, who's a nonprofit that's done a lot of great work with providing, encouraging solar power at public schools. We reported to the Climate Protection Committee on that last year. There was a lot of enthusiasm at the committee, so we want to continue and expand that program. We've talked to you before about model ordinances. One that we're working on now with our sister agencies and the Bay Area Regional Collaborative would be an ordinance for a model ordinance for solar PVs on new development. Technical guidance, we do provide a lot of tools to the cities, and that we will continue to do that, provide tools and best practices to the cities. And even convenings, one of the things we've heard back from the cities is just bring us all together. We can learn a lot from talking to our colleagues at the city up the road. And so just getting, sort of bringing people together, convening staff, and sharing best practices is something we've heard that can be very helpful for local city and county staff. Related to that are grants. We've done some grants in the past. Well, we certainly have. We have an entire division, as you know, that does grants and incentives. But specifically for climate, we've done a few ad hoc grant programs several years ago. We had one that there were 53 grants to local governments and nonprofits. And then shortly thereafter, we did another grant program that was in West Contra Costa County that was part of a settlement around the ConocoPhillips refinery. Those were very, very popular. They had a huge beneficial effect. We are still seeing the benefits of a lot of those grants today. And so we want to continue that. You can see the desired outcomes. Keep that local work going, especially with a focus on our impacted communities, and leverage what's going on already at the local level. And we discussed this with the Budget and Finance Committee last week. We're proposing $4.5 million from reserves, and the Budget and Finance Committee seemed very favorably disposed to that that idea, and so we're very eager to launch that. A few miscellaneous other topics. Again, we have the Strategic Incentives Division that does extraordinary work, and we're going to continue that work, reducing diesel PM from mobile sources, on-road and off-road mobile sources, continuing to support electric vehicle charging, another advanced technology. And another topic we talked to you about at the retreat and also last week at Exec was launching our technology implementation office. So those are all, we'll continue through our strategic incentives division. What can we do in the energy sector? You know, the energy sector is very complicated. It is regulated at the state level. One opportunity that we see is through community choice energy. And that's something we've talked about with the board a lot, and we've heard a lot, we've gotten a lot of feedback from you that that's an interest of the boards. We've been very supportive of the community choice energy organizations to date, and we want to continue that, help them build more local sources of renewables, pilot new technologies, for instance, on energy storage, help them. One of the things we've heard from them is help us estimate air quality co-benefits of these CCEs, which helps makes the case even better for expanding the community choice energy. So that's embedded part of our control strategy. And then on the transportation sector, we'll work with our sister agencies, ABAG and MTC, to support implementation of the land use and transportation strategies in Plan Bay Area. Very, very important to reduce emissions from the transportation sector. And then, as I've mentioned, working with the cities and counties on their local climate plans and local risk reduction plans. So that's sort of an overview of the control strategy. The CARE program, this got a little discussion at Mobile Source last week, so I just briefly wanted to touch upon the Community Air Risk Evaluation Program, how it's reflected in our Clean Air Plan. It is, as I mentioned early on, it is one of the basic objectives of this plan is to reduce those health disparities in our impacted communities. So I've listed here a number of ways in which the control measures in our plan will really advance, continue to make progress in reducing those disproportionate impacts. Rule 1118, I've already mentioned, and the board is pretty well familiar with that rule. A lot of rulemaking for various sources to reduce emissions from many different sources that we regulate. Enhanced air quality monitoring, we are requiring under a rule you've already adopted, fence line monitors at refineries. We are building community monitors near refineries and other enhanced monitoring throughout the Bay Area to just give us a better idea of what local communities are breathing. We provide guidance to the cities through community risk reduction plans and our planning healthy places to help them with their local planning work. And then, as I've already touched upon, the grants that we make to reduce emissions from mobile sources and our work with our partner agencies on reducing vehicle behavior. And we will be updating, we've been updating the air toxics emission inventory, so we will be revising and updating the modeling that underlies our care maps later this year, because there has been a lot of good work done. There have been very important rules at the state level on various, all sorts of diesel sources. We've worked with UC Berkeley on a study at the Port of Oakland that has documented very important significant emission reductions from the drayage trucks at the Port of Oakland. So we want to update those maps and show the progress we've made and what more we need to do. We've gotten a lot of feedback. Jack mentioned the open houses. We had 8 open houses throughout the region. We have reported to you and also previously, and also the Bay Area Regional Collaborative. These are just a few snapshots of comments we've received from this board and also from the public. Some of the first ones were direction we got from the board at the retreat. Make this understandable to the public and help the public understand where they fit in. Be very mindful of how we work with our partner agencies. We can't do this alone, so we need to work with others to get to reach these objectives. Focus on health and a few other areas of emphasis that you can see listed here. So where we are in the process, we issued the plan in early January. We issued the EIR a couple weeks ago. We just concluded 8 open houses throughout the region. They were very well attended. We're currently digesting the feedback we've gotten so far and are making adjustments based on the comments we've received, and we plan on bringing the plan to you at your April 19th board meeting. So just to wrap up, Madam Chair, we're really excited about this plan. The timing is really important. There's a lot of changes in Washington. Clearly, Washington isn't going to be a leader on climate or on air pollution. So the Bay Area has been a leader in the past. California has been a leader in the past, and we're going to continue that. We've got incredible innovative businesses here. We've got universities and think tanks. We have an engaged public and engaged elected officials. And we have a plan that can really help move the ball forward. So this, we really think that Bay Area leadership, that this is the time for us to really help move the ball forward. So I'm going to stop there, Madam Chair, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thanks. That's a very, very inclusive and good report. And I've heard very good comments from people who have gone to the open houses.
Thank you. Good.
So thank you for doing that. Someone actually sought me out the other day just to say how good it was and
right.
How much they had enjoyed the one that you did somewhere close to us, so I.
That was Henry. That's great.
Right. So, Teresa.
Thank you. You mentioned on slide 9 the solar ordinance, and we heard about that at the executive committee. And I'm just wondering, at the executive committee, we heard that it was going to be ready this week, perhaps. And I don't know if it is, but when it is, could you make sure that all of us get a copy of that?
Absolutely, yes. Okay. I'm not sure it'll be this week, but we're it has come up, but we will get it to the entire board. Absolutely, certainly, yes.
Yes, thank you.
Great presentation, Henry. I want to go back to your last point. How much of this plan assumes that the EPA continues to exist and can do its job? Basically, how Trump-proof is this plan?
Well, I will start, and maybe Jack would want to add to my remarks. I think really it's really independent from the U.S. EPA, Director Kim. We, for longstanding, California has had sort of the ability to have stronger regulations than they do at the federal level. So in many cases, our rules go far beyond what federal requirements are. So staff does not feel constrained by the change in administration. If anything, I would say staff feels invigorated by the change in Washington. And as I've said, it's our work here is more needed than ever.
If I can, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair.
Director Madam Kim, Chair, Mr. Chair.
Director Kim, I think you are probably very much aware of the fact that one vulnerability at the state is the waiver that CARB relies upon in order to be able to go further than what the feds establish in terms of motor vehicle emission standards. And that has been the topic of a lot of conversation, specifically about Scott Pruitt's confirmation. This issue came up from Senator Harris and others asking about this question. So this is something we're all watching very closely, that potentially if somehow that waiver is pulled, it's some question of whether it's already granted, could it be pulled? But that is something we're all watching very closely to see if it's going to somehow be a hindrance to the state going further than what the feds establish in terms of future motor vehicle emission standards.
Okay, thanks, Director Kim. On this side, Rebecca, was Karen, and then John. No, not Karen. Rebecca.
Thank you very much for the presentation and for all the work. And yes, we're still here. We're going to keep being here. And I agree that it just makes what we do more important. I wanted to appreciate the comment that we need not just cleaner burning vehicles, but fewer vehicle trips. I think that's going to be a really important strategy going forward. Of course, I am also a big supporter of electric cars and all the alternative fuel strategies, but when you look at all the impacts of vehicle miles traveled, they then necessitate parking lots, they then create congestion. So I think it is really important that we continue to ramp up on strategies that encourage not only cleaner burning vehicles, but less vehicles. And one of those potential strategies that's fairly low cost to implement is that the greatest unused transportation infrastructure in the Bay Area is the three empty seats in each car driving over the Bay Bridge. And so programs to encourage carpooling, to carpool match people, to create incentives for it, allows us to utilize extra transportation infrastructure without physically building anything. So I hope we'll look to both that as well as things that promote biking and walking and transit so that we really do try to drive down the vehicle trips while also working on the cleaner burning vehicles. Also, from other recent reports I've seen here, it does appear that the trucks, the over-the-road trucks, remain a major source of emissions. And so I hope we'll roll out something along the lines of cash for clunkers for bad old trucks in the near future, as well as other efforts that we can do around truck emissions. Another thing which is an overlap between two of the topics, which is mobile sources and waste, is to help encourage the making of biofuel out of organic wastes, right? So then if you take the organic waste and you don't have them emit methane from the landfill, and then you also capture them and you can make biofuel out of them, East Bay Mud has a pilot program on this that we could get involved in. They would like to expand it. As well as others, I imagine, would be interested. So I think that that would be a good area where you're both reducing waste-based methane emissions and capturing a biofuel. And then the last thing, which I don't think we've talked about very much, is what we can do on the receptor side. So there's reducing what gets polluted, but then there's also the potential of, like, planting trees and, you know, things that are on the receptor side that reduce the pollution. And that's an area we haven't discussed as much, so I would just flag that as a topic for future additional discussion. Okay. Thank you.
And I think, John, you're next, and then Katie.
A couple things. Jack, we're going to have, as I understand, a presentation to Stationary Source on the aspects of this plan that involve stationary sources, so that way we're focusing on that.
That's correct.
Right, good. And then second, I know in response to the sort of the whole EPA issue, and I know I hear about this serving on the California Air Resources Board, I think where a lot of the concern is that some of California's actions are pursuant to waivers that are issued by the EPA. And what Pruitt said in his confirmation hearings was he was going to review these waivers. Of course, I mean, I know that the Air Board's very careful about what steps it needs to take, and obviously I think the state feels that it's acting with authority and that even the EPA's role is limited in cutting back that authority, but I think folks are aware of that, and especially this waiver issue. So that, I think that's where it may come up, is actions of the California Air Resources Board that may require in the future some type of waiver from the EPA.
Yeah, thank you very much for the report and for the work. I have a couple small questions. There was a report on the radio yesterday around small off-road gas engines and their contribution to greenhouse gas emissions, as well as the very immediate public health impact they have on users. I'm thinking, talking about leaf blowers, lawnmowers, that sort of thing. And apparently, they're actually becoming a fairly significant contributor. And I was, you know, we focus a lot on the wood-burning stove incentive program, and we focused on cash for clunkers and changes, but I don't know, I don't recall and don't see anything in this plan around addressing that emitter, and frankly, I think it's a real oversight and a little bit, I think it's a social justice issue at some level as well. So I'm wondering where that is, and maybe it was over, the contribution's been over-exaggerated, but I suspect not in terms of greenhouse gases, and then certainly it is a public health issue. So I'd like to see us do some work in that area, and or maybe help me learn more about it if it is an issue. And then secondly, I see, so I'm really glad that the plan includes a 3 to 5 year short-term focus, as well as knowing that we're going to have to do work over the longer term. And of the areas that the plan's addressing, some of them, there's some lower hanging fruit than others. There's some things that can be done that will have impact in the shorter term, that we can actually get to through regulation or incentive program, and there's other things that are going to take more time for development. But it seems to me that at the Air District needs to be really utilizing its tools over which it has direct control, which are our regulatory powers, our rules, the incentive programs that we can offer with the monies we have, and the advocacy side and partnering. And I want to make sure we focus on what we can do and do it hard and do it well, and not diffuse our energies into areas that maybe are picked up better by other agencies. But one of the things that the plan talks about a lot is behavior change and the need for consumers to change their behaviors towards reducing their carbon footprint, whether they know they're walking heavily or not. And my understanding of human nature is we don't tend to make behavior changes unless we're forced to, unless we're actually just doing things and buying things for a different reason. So I'm wondering what role the Air District will play, if any, in pushing, pursuing a carbon tax towards influencing consumer behavior, and or can we? But in the end, I think that we have to have the cost of carbon embedded in the things that we buy. Anyway, two comments.
Thanks, Katie. Rod?
Thank you very much. Well, I again appreciate this plan. I appreciate partnering with the Air District as a community choice energy leader. I think there is a huge gain to be made there, as we've discussed before. I appreciated the outreach at the Cupertino meeting. I had a council meeting that night, but you had 40 folks there. You gave me a report afterward, which I really appreciated. There were folks from all over the South Bay at that meeting. Independent of your report, I received report from residents, some of whom I knew and some of whom I didn't, really appreciating this plan. You know, and for me, when I go to talk to school classes, boiling it down to that first chart that shows where we are if we just continue doing what we're doing and where we need to go is very powerful. And then the pie chart that breaks out the sectors, that's also very important. And because we're tuning it to the Bay Area, right, people begin to get that, as Katie said, it's what I'm doing and it's what all of us are doing. And how could we personally be doing things differently? So I personally find those two charts very effective in communicating the message. And thank you for your outreach.
Thanks, Rod. Katie asked if she could add another sentence.
Rod jumped in on me too quick. One other thing, on the local front, and one of the big sectors and contributors is our building efficiency and energy efficiency in buildings. And I think that's going to be one of the toughest things for local governments to address, and yet it has to be an ongoing effort given how long it takes for building stock to turn over. We're not doing a lot of new development, so how do we help local government implement energy efficiency changes in buildings? I think it's really going to be critical, and what role the Air District plays in that, I'm not sure, though I think programs like PACE will be of help, but I think that's going to be a real tough nut to crack, and it's going to be critical that we do.
Thanks. I think Mark and then Dave.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'd like to see something that says, for every adverse molecule that's created, we remove two. But I digress. So a couple things. It's a great report, Henry, as always. It's a voluminous body of work, and I know the staff has worked really hard on it. And it may, what I'm about to ask may be in there and not in this synopsis. But there are where would the focus or the search or the consideration be on the advisory council? But where on staff or in this organization do we look for and seek out the new technological advancements? And it's kind of like Moore's Law. Instead of, you know, they're just coming at a more rapid and rapid pace that affect our goals, such as films that can wrap buildings that change the heat into different wavelengths that radiate into space rather than stay trapped. And that, you know, those are the new salt, the new PV films and stuff like that that will actually make these transitions a quantum leap faster than we're currently contemplating. And I'm just wondering what division would do that, or where it would be, where that notation would be in the Clean Air Plan, that we are probably going to be technology dependent on reaching a lot of these goals, and those technologies are coming so fast they may, you know, supersede our ability to create, you know, regulations. And then the other thing I would bring, what Katie said, the magic phrase carbon tax, which I've been mentioning for years, and maybe we don't have the authority to impose a carbon tax, except in very small and certain areas, but it might be efficacious and illuminative to have it to show in some way what are the most efficacious ways of all of these, whether they be technology or perhaps financial incentives or disincentives, what are the most efficacious? It's more of an economics question. And is there an arm or a place in our organization for that? Because it would bode us well to see, you know, if what we're proposing is actually the best economic model to get to where we're going based on the economic sciences of today. And I know that's kind of that's not a science that we're generally associated with, but maybe we could figure out a way to see if indeed a carbon tax, which most economic models have shown, is a more efficacious way to get to the goal and actually produce jobs, which people find counterintuitive, but the studies are out there. So maybe we could, if we can at least impose, we could illuminate that this is what we can do, but actually the better model would be thus. That's it. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Mark.
The best for last. Yeah. I think Rebecca touched on something, and it isn't in the report from last Wednesday at the executive committee meeting when we trotted out the Technology Innovation Office. And if you go through and you read the staff report, like Rebecca bringing it up at the end, there are other things we can do. You get to the end of the report and you see one of those other things we can do that I hope is going to be heavily mentioned as we get into the actual technology, and that's carbon sequestration. And we've talked about it for some time and the value of it. You don't get credit for the, you know, planting trees for whatever reason because it doesn't put the carbon dioxide in, but you can get credit for what you're doing with the science, and that's what's really exciting people as you go back to the East, the innovation, the technology. energy conservation. These are the kind of things that are buzzwords that, that people are hearing. Well, look, I think the next thing you're going to see is the carbon sequestration and these kind of technologies for parking structures where your fans or whatever and you're getting that garbage out of there that we're, because I don't know what, San Francisco must know it. You're not going to get any flat parking lots around here. They're going to have to be structures. And I'd like to see us touch on that over the next 14, 18 months as we move ahead.
Does anyone else want to comment on the report? Karen?
I was just checking with my colleague, and I may be incorrect, but I some of my colleagues up here say they've had presentations in their community. I don't think there's been any. Have there been any presentations in Contra Costa? Was it the daytime one?
Yes, that's correct. We had one in Walnut Creek. I understand you had a conflict that day, and I apologize for
well,
that.
But it was during the day, and that's the problem. I'm really thrilled that constituents were able to come out and talk to various elected officials, but we were told the reason it was daytime is you were trying to get city staff there. I want a meeting or some sort of presentation where constituents can come. They can't come at 1:30 in the afternoon. Because they're working. So I'd like staff and work in context with Mark and John and I about an appropriate location and time to have an evening meeting so that people can see this. That, Liz, you were making comments that people were stopping you, and we want to get some input from our folks too. Mm-hmm. More in the line of this is great work. We want to get it out there. We want people to know what we're doing proactively. So thank you very much.
Okay, I am looking. Mark?
It's just a minor epiphany.
no epiphany.
To the end that Director Mitchoff was talking about getting the public more available, would it be possible for our communications division, our CRAC communications and outreach division, to create like a 3 to 5 minute presentation that would be accessible, like on YouTube or not quite a Snapchat, that might be a little too short, but or something like that. But a 3 to 5 minute video that would be, accessible. You don't have to, plan an evening to go here. 90 minutes of blather when you just want the 3 to 5 minutes of information, how it's going to affect me, what can I do? Do I have any additions to it? So it doesn't have to be an Academy Award winning La La Land production.
Or Moonlight.
Oh, was it Moonlight? No. But just something, simple. Maybe you could host it. You're telegenic. You could.
Well, both. I think that's an excellent idea.
But I think that's something that could be put together.
I would hope that's something we could actually move forward with, because the attention span of those people now is so short that if you can do a 3 to 5 minute presentation up on the YouTube or some other quick way, I think you'd probably get a lot of people watching it. And it's hard to be succinct, I know, but I think that could make a big difference. And maybe there are some of the stars, right, sitting here today.
Director Ross, Chair Nis, thank you for those comments. We have produced a video. We've produced two. We've done a 30-second video and a longer two-minute video that tries to hit, sort of give that general overview, the inspiration, get the word out. So we have shown that. I've shown it at some of the previous meetings. In the interest of time today, I didn't present it today, but we could bring it back at your public engagement committee on Monday, certainly.
Yeah. Or just send us the link, and we can put it out on our social media. I think we're asking.
Thank you. We will do that as well. That actually, Director Haggerty raised that at a recent meeting, and I don't remember which meeting, but we are working to get that to you and on local cable access in each of your communities. So that's sort of an overview, and then we plan on following up with some more further videos that sort of drill down into some of these topics a little more as well.
I think long term, what I would be after is something that becomes as common as spare the air, where everybody understands what that means. They get it right away, and it's become part of it's almost part of the lexicon in the Bay Area. And people tease about it, but I think they really get what that's about. And so we're going a step beyond that to the next steps. And I think that's what we're saying. Emphasize that. Get that out in such a way that maybe it's cool the climate. I don't know what it will be, but spare the air certainly is one that caught everybody's attention.
Great.
Okay, if there's nothing else, I think at this point we should wrap this one up.
We do have one public comment.
Oh, thanks, Marcy.
Yes, Jed Holtzman. Yes.
Okay, still good morning.
Hi there, Chair Niss and directors. Jed Holtzman from 350 Bay Area. Thanks to the webcasting staff who allowed me to catch the first part of this meeting while my commute was happening. And hello to the new board members. I look forward to hopefully meeting you at some point. Really quickly, 350 Bay Area is a regional climate advocacy nonprofit that actually worked with the board back in 2013 to get a climate protection resolution passed, which led to a 10-point climate action work plan, which led to the 2017 Clean Air Plan climate portion of that, rather, that you're dealing with today. And I really just want to thank planning staff, Henry, Abby, Dave, and Christy, and Yvette. Those are the only folks I've worked with, but I know there must be many more. This is a first-in-the-nation multi-sectoral climate action strategy. This is a super big deal. Joe Biden would call it something else. A BFD, I believe. It shows people that a positive change is possible, that basically with all of the horrific news coming in every day, there are things that we can actually do. And providing a 2050 vision, I think, is really farther than really anyone's gone before in terms of it's not very far away at this point. We've been talking about this for 30 years. What do we really need to have in 30 more years to survive as a species? We'll be submitting formal comments. I don't have time to preview those. Our members have already started to submit their own comment letters, and I expect you'll receive several. Slide 4 of your presentation, which is the GHG graph, this has to be our guiding force. We are very, very far away. Science tells us that even if we meet these goals, we have about a 50, 60% chance of civilization persisting in the long term. That's not enough for us. How is what we're doing going to impact that curve? How does this plan impact that curve? How much do we have to reduce that per year in order to meet our goals? How is what we are doing matching up to that? Thank you.
Thank you. Is that it for the public comment? Okay. And if there's nothing else, have I forgotten anything at this point looking down at staff? Okay, if not, we are going to go into closed session. And are we going to meet in that room over there, Jack?
Yes, we're going to be meeting in the Claremont room for the closed session.
Okay.
We have two items.
Okay, so with that, if you just take a few minutes to get yourselves reorganized, take a quick visit across the hall, anything like that, and I know that Rod is going to leave. Pardon? would you call the speaker, Mercy?
We need to, Madam Chair, we need to close out the closed session and report out any reportable items, and then we can move to the next item.
There are no reportable items from the closed session. Thank you, and we'll go back to the speaker.
Tom Lewis.
Tom, did you not speak previously?
I did.
I don't know what.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about something a little different. I wanted to thank you guys for pointing out and being aware that you're. In the near future, not likely to have an EPA. You might actually be diametrically opposed to the policies of the new EPA, if there is one. And I hope that you are willing to fight. I hope you're willing to fight the industry that I work in as hard as you are. The new administration. I would also point out that tonight, in Mark's city council, there's going to be a presentation about Martinez possibly becoming a sanctuary city, and I think that's an excellent example of pushing back against some of the new federal policies. I don't know if anybody's with me. I appreciate the fact that the city of San Francisco. Not only sanctuary city, but it's also apparently now entered into some discussions with Mexico, and is going to be fighting hard for immigrants' rights. One other thing that I wanted to just mention is Markstown passed a fundraising thing about fixing roads. And I think that's really critical to the mobile source committee. I think that in my case, for example, I've moved to bigger and heavier vehicles because the potholes in my county and around my town are so bad that they beat the heck out of my vehicles. And so I'm causing more of a problem with heavier vehicles, but that's what it takes to survive.
Thank you for speaking to us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
With that, everyone, unless there's any other comment, we are adjourned. Thank you all for staying on and letting us complete the agenda.